Hello, gorgeous.
I would make a great queen because I am so stubborn.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Never take a learning opportunity away from another student. No matter how smart you meet everyone to think you are.
I am dancing a bright beam of light.
Teen is your family. You have to protect them from those guys, okay?
Make the money. Don't let it make you.
You had me at hello.
And most importantly, you must always have faith in yourself.
This is I'm Here for the Food.
Oh, what's up, everybody? This is I'm Here for the Food, I think.
Right.
Where we discuss topics that feed your mind, your spirit, and your soul. I am Melissa, and I am going crazy from being quarantined.
I'm still blue, last time I checked. I'm still blue.
Oh, my God. Okay, so Blue, tell me, what the hell is going on in your neck of the woods? Have you gotten out? Have you restocked on toilet paper? What's the supermarket looking like? Do they have the 6 feet, you know, apart markers on the floor yet? What's your world like?
Toilet paper, what's that? No, I've been wiping myself with napkins for like 2 weeks now. It's my new reality.
I can
reality.
Send you some by Uber. I have 24 rolls.
Why do you have 24 rolls? Well, actually, I wish you had told me that my baby cousin spent $50 shipping me toilet paper from Boston that I'm waiting on right now. It's my new reality.
I was almost about to get some shipped from Canada, and then a friend of mine was in Encino, and he was rolling to Beverly Hills. He was like, I'm at Ralph's. What do you need? I was like, toilet paper.
He found toilet paper?
He bought me 24 rolls. Okay.
That's like getting 2 dozen roses during the
Rona. Pretty much. He was like, anything else? I was like, yeah, kale, butter, cucumbers, lettuce. And he was like, slow your roll.
What kind of salad is that? That's a lot.
I just started naming stuff that rice, but, he's a good friend. He ended up bringing all of that stuff to me. And
I've been eating healthy since the Rona happened.
Good for you.
So healthy.
Good for you. I had a massive breakdown this past Tuesday, and my computer was on the fritz. I needed 5 hours of updates and an hour and a half long conversation with Apple. So guess what I did that night? I ordered a pizza and drank a bottle of wine and smoked a blunt and passed out. You know?
Yeah. I haven't had alcohol since December. So we're on two very different coronavirus pandemic paths right now. The thing about you, Melissa, is though, like your snatchback is so like, you can literally eat pizza for a month and nobody would notice. I think about pizza and my pants are tight. So I have to stay on the track because when this is over and they reschedule the half marathon, I want to be able to say that I was still training during the apocalypse.
Yeah, let me tell you something, okay? It is a party up top and it is like pajamas down below. I haven't worn anything that does not have a massive amount of spandex in it since this whole thing went down. So Lord only knows what I
mean. At least you have on pants. A lot of people are taking Zoom meetings without pants on.
Girl,
barely. Okay, never mind. Never mind.
That's the reality of my situation. Like I pajamas, jogging pants, tights, you know, anything that I can transition from like walking Daisy outside to getting back into the house with as much comfort to accommodate, you know.
So you are going outside then?
I got a dog. I got to walk her outside.
Do you have a mask?
I don't, but my neighborhood is it's very sparse. Like, I think I might see maybe one or two people. And trust me when I say people cross the street. I'm like, is it because I'm black or it's because this COVID-19 shit is going on? I can't really tell.
A little bit of both. In Beverly Hills, it's a little bit of both, I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, you know what? They get a pass this time. Yeah, you cross the street, so I don't have to. But yeah, no, me and Daisy, that's my quarantine bae. You know, it's just me and her. And so if I got to take her on frequent walks.
I have one too. My quarantine bae's name is Zoom because everybody and their mother wants to Zoom me every 20 minutes. Like, I don't still have a job that I have to do, but that's okay.
I know. Like, the amount of phone calls I'm getting from people who are just, like, bored. Many. I'm like, don't call me. Don't call me. I don't want to hear it. Yeah. Do you have any quarantine bays in other states right now?
I plead the fifth. I have never felt more loved. I will say that. I feel very loved right now.
That's good. That's good.
So I'm going to leave it at that.
That is exceptional. It's going to be interesting to see who gets out of this situation with their relationships still intact, especially if they're having to quarantine together, and how many people were actually brought together by way of only having phone and FaceTime and Zoom as a means of communication, because we're going to see a whole lot of, you know, people who came together because of it and people mm-hmm. who separated because of it. I saw that there's like some statistic that divorce attorneys are saying that there is like a 50% increase in calls for petitions of divorce.
In China, they're having a pandemic of divorces now that they are clear of COVID-19. So China's always ahead of us. So if we are following their trends even more, people are literally running to the divorce lawyer as they're being released from quarantine. In China, we're probably next. But, you know, there's also the situation of when life seems a little bit daunting, you find yourself having those late night phone calls with someone that you might have overlooked. So
listen, and let me tell you something.
I'm going to keep pleading the fifth, but the Rona has been good to me from indoors. Okay. Yeah. If you stay home, you can get you a bae, you can lose you some weight. I've really enjoyed this, unless I'm going to be honest.
You know what I've been thinking about? What happens to the guys who have, you know, whole secret families? Like, how did they make the decision?
Like my father?
How did they make the decision as to which family they stayed with?
Yeah, I'm from Latin America and the Caribbean. We are known for this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Dominican men, Haitian men, Cuban men, don't at me because you know it's true. And so I'm very interested what my community is going through right now, because I have a couple of cousins. I'm going to hush. But yeah, coronavirus is pulling out a lot of skeletons out of a lot of closets, because suddenly you have to explain why Juan is gone for 3 months.
Exactly. So going back a couple of episodes that we had, hopefully you guys were able to check out the episode that we had with Dr. Bernard Ashby and Dr. Mark Lamont Hill. It's called
I really did too.
Pulling the Trump Card, where we talked about, you know, this current administration's failure inform the public in a timely manner as to what to expect and et cetera, and not end us up where there's no end in sight. I mean, they keep mm-mm. moving the goalpost. Like, they keep on saying, okay, well, it's going to be mid-April. Then it's going to be the end of April. Okay, well, fuck it. It's June now. Can you imagine doing all of this up until June? No.
First of all, and this is a point that I want to point out, a lot of people after that show were like, Blue, why are you guys blaming the millennials? It's Generation Z. No, it's not. Let me get you guys a calculator. Millennials is 25 to 40, mm-hmm. okay? So 25 to 40-year-olds, it's not spring breakers who are only 18, 19, 20. I think when we hear things like spring break, we think it's people in their late teens and early 20s. It's actually millennials, 25 to 40, grown people who are out of college, who are having these birthday parties for their kids. There was literally in Hyde Park, an area in Los Angeles, a group of 40 people in their 20s and 30s were dispersed because they were having a one-year-old's birthday party during a pandemic. It's people who are going to the beach and having beach parties. Virginia has had to move their dates all the way till June 10th because people were partying at the beaches in Virginia. So yeah. Please stop writing us that it's not millennials. It is millennials. It is people 25 to 40 who are out of school and should know better who are doing this. And because of them, we're all being put on detention. I said what I said. Yeah. Don't at me.
I think, that's true. I think that also when we were seeing photos of the spring breakers out in mass in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, Daytona, and Miami,
Tampa,
the ones that were caught on camera, they were like, I've been looking forward to the spring break. Those definitely are the Gen Zers. There is definitely a difference between the two. But there's just a ton of people that just are not adhering to.
It's all of us. And the thing is, they're broke. Here's the thing about spring break that you guys don't want to talk about. A lot of times when there's spring break, older people will go to a spring break because they're like, it's already partying. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect time for me to infuse myself in a party environment. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be careful, because just because young people are the only ones stupid enough to be on camera, it doesn't mean they're the only ones there, guys.
They're
just the only ones dumb enough to be caught on camera.
They were definitely bragging about not having any fear about catching the Rona while they were out there at the beach. And a significant amount of them after going to parties and hanging out with their friends and swapping spit and other bodily fluids, well, a lot of them have tested positive. So there's that part. Yeah. But going back to the episode, one thing that, that, you know, I brought up and we were talking about is the, you know, the fear and the anxiety that I was, starting to feel about people who are quarantined with their abusers. You know,
yeah.
women and children who are forced to shelter in place with, you know, the abuser in their family, and there's nobody to rescue them, you know? So and since that episode aired and, you know, we had that, you know, very brief kind of like, you know, we touched on that topic very briefly. I've been seeing reports about the increase in calls to domestic violence hotlines, you know, and also child welfare workers expressing how fearful they are about high-risk kids who no longer go to school, so they're not anywhere near their mandatory reporters who could assist with, you know, informing welfare workers of abusive situations. So I thought that we should spend an episode talking a little bit about that. So we've got some really incredible guests that are going to join us.
So excited.
We've got Ralph Godsby, and we've also got Kaylin Foy. So I want to give them a proper introduction before they join us.
Perfect. Let's go.
Imagine this. A pandemic hits the globe and citizens in every state and country are forced to quarantine at home in an effort to stop the rate of contagion. Government officials have issued a shelter-in-place mandate and you and or your spouse has lost their jobs. It's unbelievable, but this is where we are. But what happens when you're forced to stay inside in a home that is so abusive that your life is more at risk than going outside and facing a virus whose mortality rate is steadily creeping up? According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, on average, 20 people are victims of physical violence by their partner in the country every minute. Since the shelter-in-place mandate was issued, shelters and therapists say the calls for help have increased by 20%. Today, we are joined by Kaylin Foy, a domestic violence survivor and an advocate who handles training and outreach for the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Council in the Virgin Islands, and Ralph Godby, former chief of the Detroit Police Department and the current chief of Detroit Public Schools and Community District. I want to thank you both for joining us today.
For businesses around the world, today isn't a restart, it's a rethink. That's why they're partnering with IBM. Retailers are keeping their systems up as millions of orders move online. Call centers are using IBM Watson to manage customer questions with AI. And solutions built on the IBM cloud are helping patients receive trusted information. Today, we're rethinking how business moves forwards. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.
The topic is going to be really, really heavy. You know, I'm not sure if you were able to see a past episode of I'm Here for the Food, but Blue and I had been talking about, you know, just our concern that with this shelter in place mandate that is basically, you know, nationwide and, you know, people having to be quarantined and this being a really, really stressful situation, that there was more likely than not going to be a rise in domestic violence complaints. And also the fact that children are out of school. You know, teachers are mandatory reporters. They help assist, you know, child welfare workers, you know, keep abreast of their higher risk children and schools out, you know. So women and children are home with their abusers. So Ralph, I wanted to kind of direct the question to you first. Seeing that you were the chief of police in Detroit, and now you basically oversee the public schools and community district in Detroit. From a law enforcement standpoint, what limitations has this quarantine put on police officers actually doing their job and responding to complaints such as domestic violence or suspicion of child abuse and neglect?
Well, I think you framed it excellently, and I'm so glad that you and Blue have made this a very central point to this show, because unfortunately, the shelter in place is a perfect storm for an abuser. And what an abuser looks for, they look to isolate. They look to keep a person away from their family, from their friends, from their social activities, everything that would give the abused a way to get out of that situation. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, we lose a lot of synergy from the standpoint of mandatory reporters, social workers, teachers, principals, assistant principals, counselors. If they notice any kind of abuse with a child, they have a mandatory reporting requirement. Mm-hmm. And now it's exacerbated because let's say you have a woman that's injured as a result of an abuser. If she goes to the hospital with the COVID-19 prevalence, hospitals are barely keeping up with the pace to do what they do now. Those some of the hospital workers are mandatory reporters, the nurses, the doctors. So if they never get a chance to see that doctor, now it's perpetuating a situation and making it even more daunting for that person that's abused. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that police departments across the country with intentionality make sure that as we go to online learning, whatever platforms are going to happen for the school year, we have to have a meaningful way to check in with young people for their well-being. Mm-hmm. But for that abused person, we have to also make sure that there are resources out there. Because the most difficult thing to do in a lot of instances, and a lot of people will say, well, why doesn't she just leave? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, she doesn't seem like the type that would be involved in fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. That is such a narrow point of view, and it really doesn't deal with the psychosomatic drama that goes on, the controlling nature. All abuse is not physical. Some of it goes to financial. Mm-hmm. If the abuser controls the finances, if the abuser has the medical insurance, mm-hmm. and the person wants to go to a doctor, but they won't give the insurance card. I mean, it's just so many things. And domestic violence is about control. And as long as that abuser can maintain control, he or she feels like they are the dominant person. Mm-hmm. It is just so amazing that you all would pick this topic, but have the foresight. Because everything that we're looking at and worrying about, if you look at the national trends, crime is actually going down. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind that is because if you look at a classic crime prevention triangle, there are three things that contribute to crime. One is the perpetrator. What type of person commits what type of crime? Mm-hmm. The other is from a victim or a victimology standpoint. Are you a target-rich person? Mm-hmm. Are you in a darkly lit place pumping your gas? Are you going into a liquor store at 2 a.m. in the morning? Mm-hmm. And then the other is the environment. So with the shelter in place, in about 90% of the states right now, those target-rich environments don't exist. So crime initially is going down.
Mm-hmm. What's up, foodies? I have a new deal for you and a new favorite thing. I've discovered a tasty new way to stay on my hydration and fitness goals. It is called Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a vitamin pack that you can throw into your water, and it is equivalent to drinking 2 to 3 bottles of plain old water. It hydrates you so much better than those sugary traditional sports drinks, which honestly taste like cough syrup to me. Sorry, not my thing. Also, if we've been drinking a little bit too much, this girl here, while we've been, you know, stuck at home, this helps get you over your little hangover feeling. I'm not sure about you, but being stuck at home has helped me devote a lot more time to my fitness goals. And this keeps me super duper hydrated and helps me power through my workouts. So I count this as my absolute favorite thing right now. Now, you guys know me. I love a company that provides products and services that have a philanthropic side. And Liquid IV has donated more than 2 million of these packages to countries around the world. That includes Nepal, Uganda, Haiti, and so many more. So here's the part where you guys save. Log on to Liquid IV, that is liquidiv.com/foodie, FOODIE, to save 25% off of your first order. That's liquidiv.com/foodie, FOODIE, for 25% off of your first order. Trust me when I say you are going to love the taste of this stuff.
sure.
I have a question about that, about the crime going down. I think we talked about this offline, about how Melissa and I feel like we're fortunate that we don't have a husband and kids annoying us, because everybody's mm-hmm. been joking about how being stuck in the house during quarantine is making everybody go mad. And we talked about how in China, now that they're on the other side of the coronavirus, they're right. seeing the divorce rates go up because people got tired of being yeah. in the house with folks. Absolutely. So right now, I can see why crime is going down. But, you know, we talked about opportunity also being a factor for crime. Mm-hmm. For me as a single woman living alone, Melissa, a single woman living alone, I fear about reporting because mm-hmm. right now, like Tekashi 6ix9ine is being released from jail because they don't want to spread the coronavirus. The pandemic is happening in the prisons and the jails. And so they're actually letting people out of jail right now, thanks to COVID-19. And so law enforcement is being a lot more hesitant to put people behind bars. So if I see someone potentially screaming through my door and they're getting beat by their partner, or I see a child who I think is in danger and I report it, because the bar for what's going to be actionable offense right now is so high due to public health concerns, what exactly are you guys arresting people for? Because right now it feels like everybody's just getting a ticket and being sent home. But home is not safe for everybody right now.
No, you're actually right, Blue. But actually what the scenario you described, that is an actionable thing that you would have every expectation for a police officer to intervene.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, the traffic ticket that you would usually write, you know, police officers had their pet peeves about certain things, and you engage somebody maybe in a disorderly conduct because you don't like their public conduct. Those are the kind of things that have a lot of discretion involved with them. When it comes to violence against persons, those are the things that, you know, we have to prepare ourselves as much as we can with personal protection equipment. But there's every expectation that a police officer is duty bound to respond.
Oh, thank God.
Life is threatened. Yeah. So that's the bar. That's the instruction I've given my officers. I have jurisdiction over Detroit Public Schools. Mm-hmm. But we have 110 school buildings, 52,000 students, 7,000 employees. But right now, just from a personal protection standpoint, we have to prioritize. Do I really need to write that blowing a stop sign ticket? When you look at what could happen from a transmittal of the COVID-19 virus, mm-hmm. well, those are the kind of prioritizations that a department should be taking. But when it comes to personal safety, when it comes to domestic violence, child abuse, anything that threatens physical life, we should be coming lights and sirens and engaging at the same level prior to this.
Yeah, so I love that.
That's the expectation. That's what we're sworn to do.
Yeah, it's what's scary to me is the fact that as citizens, understanding that police resources are being redirected, and pared down. A lot of people have felt like they need to take advantage of the Second Amendment and go out and buy guns to protect themselves. Yeah, what scares me is that abusers themselves have gone out to purchase guns. So let's just say I'm a teacher and I had a couple of high-risk students in my class, and I'm sitting at home and I'm stressed out because I'm afraid that of what's going to happen to these kids, that they're not going to return to my classroom, you know, when school's back in. What happens in a situation like that if, you know, if a child welfare worker wants to continue to make house calls, but they're afraid of the, you know, getting COVID-19? Like, I know that these questions are kind of like a, you may not have the answers kind of thing, just because nobody's ever been through this kind of, it's unprecedented. Yeah.
But the fact that you raised the question is a very important question, mm-hmm. because we have gotten so caught up in the moment about transmission of the virus. We haven't thought far enough out as an industry. What are some of the consequences when you go, you know, 2 weeks, okay. Mm-hmm. You go 4 weeks. Now they're talking maybe 2 or 3 months. Now, maybe even to the first of the year. The dynamics are going to start to change. Mm-hmm. Because from a psychological standpoint, we're all traumatized. Mm-hmm. I've been in law enforcement for 33 years. I started when I was 10. Mm-hmm. And when you look at, see, you got it.
I just did the math on that.
But this is the first time in my career. I mean, we have been through September 11th. Mm-hmm. Right. I've lost officers in the line of duty. I've seen partners that were maimed and killed. I've been to more police funerals than you can imagine. It's the first time in my career I've heard police officers tell me, "Chief, I'm scared. I'm afraid." Because this is something, you know, you don't train for this in a police academy. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different dynamic. So as we start to go along and get further away from, you know, the initial times, and you start to see the numbers double, you start to see the death rate. Mm-hmm. You see comrades. Detroit Police Department lost a high-ranking police member that died. Chief Craig, the chief of police in Detroit, he tested positive.
Wow.
Quarantined for 14 days. 11 people in my department that worked directly for me tested positive. So this thing is very real. And as this starts to go along, we have to be very, very concerned about those persons that are vulnerable.
Yeah.
Be abused. Mm-hmm. But also we have to contemplate, at what point is there a level of civil unrest where people say, "I'm just not staying in the house no more."
Yeah,
PTSD is real. People are already starting to snap.
Businesses that are not occupied, mm-hmm. You know, which, you know, could lend to looting. Mm-hmm. You know, a number of different things. So the dynamics will shift if we're not forward thinking. So the fact that you're raising the question, Melissa, it is so important, and more journalists will need to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because this is how we have to think as a police department.
I think that it's, you know, I went on live yesterday and I was talking about this particular subject just to kind of, you know, offer a prelude to my audience that this was going to be the conversation that we were going to have with two people that I, you know, that I consider to be experts in this, and the amount of people that had never thought of this, never thought about the fact that people are going to be sheltered in place with their abusers, and, you know, this being a stressful situation, that is the only provocation that an abuser needs to, you know, let off steam, and usually that ends in the injury or maiming or death of their spouse or their children. I wanted to bring Kaylin into the conversation at this point, because not only are you a domestic violence and sexual assault advocate, you were also a survivor yourself. You started an organization called SAFE, Sisters Acquiring Financial Empowerment. So it's amazing that you already mentioned that abuse isn't always physical, Ralph. It's also financial. From the standpoint of somebody who was a victim and now a survivor herself, what's something that you can offer to anybody who either has a friend or a family member that they suspect are going through this and are concerned about them, or somebody who's watching this and that is their reality? What are some of the steps that they can take during this shelter in place, mandate that they can, you know, like, what's a safe haven for them? Like, what do you know, or what do you think that shelters are doing right now in order to adhere to quarantining, but still trying to keep, you know, victims safe?
I'm on webinars every day that are talking about these things. Mm-hmm. Shelters, domestic violence shelters, are still open. They're still, they are first responders. They're still there to help. So mm-hmm. I don't want anyone to feel that there is not emergency help available for them. They can call 911. They can go to an emergency shelter. If you don't feel that going to a shelter is your choice at this moment, because we definitely empower the victim to make the decisions for themselves on what they know their situation and their story better than we do. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, as a friend, compassion is needed. You know, a little bit of compassion, because you don't know all the dynamics. You don't know how this person has threatened this victim. Mm-hmm. They might have threatened the children. They might have threatened their mother. And you see news stories where people actually go through with these things. So sometimes people are like, okay, I have to, you know, wait and timing. And so to help kind of figure out what the timing and what that looks like, I highly suggest that you safely look for and access information in regards to how to create a safety plan. So the National Domestic Violence Hotline is thehotline.org. They have a lot of safety plan information. They also have safety plan information for the the family and friends of victims as well. So you can go, if you're like, well, my friend is going through this, and you can pull up information for them. You can pull up some, the red flags and how to safety plan, how to get your bank account information, how to get your all your paperwork, your driver's license, your passports, your child's immunization records, birth certificates, all the things you're going to need. Because when you leave, that's it. Mm-hmm. Do not come back. Don't think about coming back. Don't think about that TV that you paid for, that the couch that was there that you went half in with the abuser for. Once you gather your things and you decide to leave, do not think about coming back. You would be surprised the number of fatalities that occur when someone says, I had to go back and get this jewelry or my mama's urn or whatever that is important to you that you didn't take originally. That's where safety planning comes first. So you could think about all of those things beforehand. When you go, go. Because it gets back to what Ralph Garvey was saying. What is domestic violence? Domestic violence isn't, I was stressed out. Domestic violence isn't caused by COVID-19. Domestic violence isn't caused by stress. It is not caused by drinking or alcohol or drugs or any of those things. It's because one person made a conscious decision that they wanted to have full, complete power and control over the one person that they said loves them the most. And that they said loved them. They say they love this person, but yet they want to have control over them.
Okay, so that's safety planning.
At the point that the point that the person is trying to leave, they now feel that they're losing this power and control over this person that they care about and that cares about them. So that's when everything starts to escalate.
Okay, and where do you say safety planning? Where is that literature found? It's the like
One great source is the National Domestic Violence Hotline is the best source. But I mean, you could even do a Google search for domestic violence. The National Domestic Violence Hotline, they actually have little protections on their website. Like if somebody walks up behind you, you could click a button and get out of it real quick. So that's why I always recommend that one. And then when you do look, make sure you clear your browsers, clear your cookies, clear your trash, you know, so that the abuser doesn't go behind and see, you know, a record of that. And this is where friends and family can even come in to look up that and maybe pass you that information on the phone while you're talking to them. So, you know, you have to be really savvy about how you do this and really safe and really cautious about who you even tell as well. Because you don't want it to get back. You don't want to reveal, you know, and in volatile situations, this is a volatile situation that we're all living in. Mm-hmm. It's really easy for the person to get frustrated and say, this is why I'm leaving you, I'm tired of you. And that type of conversation can also escalate things. So really you have to keep your plan.
And Kayla makes such excellent points. That escape plan is just so critical. And I always give a word of caution when I deal with domestic violence survivors or people that are trying to escape. A lot of times people think that the personal protection order, which is a civil order, all of a sudden creates this wall and protects them. Mm-hmm. And it is a great tool, and I don't discourage it. However, sometimes if you don't have an exit plan and that the abuser is served with those papers, it takes them to a whole different level
of rage.
Control.
Yeah.
Rage, you know, how dare you tell on me? You know, try to shame the victim. You know, try to convince the victim, you know, I really love you and I only did this because I love you. And unfortunately, it can end in a murder.
Yeah. So
I don't want people to get a false sense of security from the personal protection
order. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that I don't think that a lot of people realize, and that, you know, my friends in law enforcement have said to me that the most perilous situation that anybody, especially law enforcement, can find themselves in is a DV, is a response to DV, because it can just go off the rails like that, and a lot more than just, you know, a spouse or children will be harmed. Even cops will be harmed. You know, just anybody in the vicinity can be harmed in a situation like that. And you brought up a good point about the protective order. I mean, I know just by hearing stories and my own personal experiences, they have not always been the easiest things to get. It's like you
you literally have to have proven a history of violence by way of hospital visits and documentation of injuries and stuff like that. But that seems so counterproductive because it would only exacerbate the situation and the anger within the abuser themselves. So like in this state that we're in right now, you know, this pandemic, how does a protective order even work if you're sheltered in place with your abuser?
And that's the difficult part. And again, mm-hmm. just going back to Kaylin's point about having an exit strategy or exit plan, mm-hmm. I would opine that it is more important to escape than to get the PPO, depending on the circumstances, because it's a process. Now, in the state of Michigan, they are pretty liberal with granting what's called an ex parte order, which means that, you know, if you can demonstrate reasonably to a judge, they will sign a civil order at that moment. The person is served, and then there's a court date set if the person wants to contest the order. But otherwise, it's in place for a year if you don't want to contest it. Now, again, that's a tool to have in a toolbox. But if you go through that iterative process and then you don't leave, it just raises the danger for the person that's abused exponentially. Because, again, there's an anger there. And it goes back, as Kaylin said, it's about control. Mm-hmm. How dare you go outside of the household and tell our business, or, you know, what are you trying to do? Get me put in jail? I mean, some of the responses that you hear is just absolutely unfathomable.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about that, about the responses. We are used to saying that there's safety in numbers. Mm-hmm. And we're used to saying things like, Melissa and I always talk about how when there's bad behavior from bad guys, we think good guys shouldn't be complicit and they should speak up. Mm-hmm. However, if you're in a house and you see someone might be getting abused, I could see where it would be dangerous mm-hmm. for a man to confront another man who's in the same home with him about abusing his wife or his children, because that might actually exacerbate the situation as well. Okay. And so I think what I'm learning from listening to you guys talk is, if you see something in the house, saying it in the house probably isn't the best place to do it. And it makes me feel like maybe going to the grocery store to like get groceries would be a better place to have those kind of conversations. Or if you're trying to escape, leaving the house for essential items feels like the only time that you can even think about leaving, because otherwise you're all stuck in the same four walls together. I'm just curious, what would you recommend to someone who sees something but is now being told not to say anything because it might instigate an abuser who's stuck in the house?
Well, I think it's important, first of all, if the person sees something and it is going on contemporaneous with what they see, call 911. You have to have the courage and the intestinal fortitude. You know, if I lose you as a friend because I stop you from abusing somebody, then we're just not friends. Because number one, silence lends consent.
Exactly.
I got to go biblical for a moment. How can two walk together except they be in agreement? Mm-hmm. I can't be a grown man and be in the presence of another man abusing his wife. I can't do that. I wasn't raised that way. I'm not cut that way. That's not the way we treat our queens. And that's not representative of how a king conducts himself. Mm-hmm. So I owe it to that person, if they're truly my friend, say, look, man, this is not cool. I don't know what you're going through, mm-hmm. but we need to talk. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do this in my presence, nor should you be doing this at all. Unfortunately, a lot of times we just want to go along to get along. Well, you know, that's between them. That's their business.
Exactly. That's a very common mindset. And it's not always explicit either. It's not always a backhanded slap. Sometimes it's a tensing of a shoulder. You're like, wait.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's, you know, it's the flexing up.
The flinch,
that cut of the eyes when she says something that's not pleasing to him. You know, all of these little control triggers that people notice. And what bothers me to no end, and Kaylin, I know you can relate to this from dealing with survivors, but also when we lose somebody to domestic violence and the number of people that say, well, you know, I knew he wasn't this, or I saw this and I didn't say nothing. Well, I didn't think it was my business. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is literally that urgent. That's the type of urgency we have to have when we notice that those triggers are going and they're about, and that person is being abused. Now, I want people to appreciate this as well. I've gone to domestic violence runs. Now, I haven't been in a police car as a police officer responding in a long time. but I've gone. I met my partner, I literally, as we were exiting the car, I'm watching this man. I mean, just wailing on this woman. Me and my partner, we run. You know, he's so focused on abusing her, he doesn't even see us coming. Mm-hmm. I grab him. We fall into the house, go through a glass table, and she's hitting me, saying, "Don't hurt him." But you got to understand the Stockholm syndrome, and when somebody is in a traumatized situation, they may fear more what's going to happen after you leave mm-hmm. than your intervention. Mm. So even if somebody says, "You know, I'm good," you cannot leave it at that when you know that abuse is there. Mm-hmm. You've got to intervene if it takes, you know, getting a couple of your girlfriends together, sisters, family, pastor, whatever you need to do. But we need far more interventions in our community with people to have the courage to say, this is just not acceptable.
What's up, foodies? We have another favorite thing and another deal for you guys. Yeah, I know, Daisy. I'm about to tell them right now, okay? It's Skillshare. It's an online community and it offers a membership with meaning. It's got millions of people who have already joined and they're just waiting for you. Do you have a passion that you need to reignite? Do you have creativity that you've kind of let fall by the wayside because you've been so busy with work and stuff? Well, now none of us are going to work, so we got nothing but time on our hands. So check out Skillshare. We have a code to offer you that I'm going to let you know in just a second, but I want to tell you about some of the courses that I've decided to invest in for myself. I've decided to go and log on to the creative writing course because, like you guys know, I am writing a book and I wanted to really do the lion's share of the work myself. So creative writing, their course is like really helping me out. The other thing is I'm very iPhone illiterate, but I have tons of content ideas. So what I've decided to do was take their iPhone for filmmaking content. So watch out, Jerry Bruckheimer. When this shelter in place thing is over, I'm going to get my whole filmmaking thing on. And I want you guys to do the same thing. So log on to Skillshare.com/food, F-O-O-D. That is the code that is going to help you save 2 months of a premium membership for free. I don't know how long the shelter in place thing is going to last, but 2 months is it's a pretty good idea that we're going to have that much time to devote to this. So log on to Skillshare.com/food, F-O-O-D, for your chance to save at 2 months of a premium membership for free.
Kaylin, I want you to speak from the perspective of, you know, somebody who was a victim of domestic violence and to discuss that Stockholm syndrome that you might have experienced at the time. Because like the both of you said, a lot of people from the outside looking in, they judge this situation. Well, why doesn't she just leave? It's not.
She's so smart.
Yeah, she's so intelligent. How could she be so stupid to be in a situation like that? Most people don't understand how systematic, how insidious, how it is a very calculated process in which you become ensnared in this situation. Yeah, you're groomed. Exactly. We talk about grooming a lot on the show when it comes to victimization. So from the perspective of somebody who survived it but was at one point a victim, can you discuss a little bit about that Stockholm syndrome and why status and the amount of money that you make, none of that matters?
No, domestic violence doesn't discriminate. And when that's being said, domestic violence doesn't discriminate. People really don't realize it doesn't discriminate. Age, I mean, it goes from our young teens up to our seniors. There's senior citizens who are still in domestic violence situation. You have people on all income levels, age, sexual orientation, class, like it doesn't even matter. It's across the board. And so a lot of it, this is why a lot of the work that's being done by domestic violence advocates across the world is around prevention and around awareness. Mm-hmm. Because domestic violence, a lot of people know domestic violence physical. I know that. I might know mental or emotional, but you might not know a lot of those other ways that it presents itself. Isolation, using male privilege, economic abuse. The threats, you know, so some of those other things you're often not sure. And that's why I suggest that people you know, call a local program or call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Talk to somebody, you know, how to go to talk to a counselor. You know, there are a lot of people doing things virtually now where you don't have to actually go to a place to get that type of stuff. There's even chat where you could chat to a counselor. And so what happens is when you don't know, you can't really do better. So mm-hmm. if you don't know that you're in the situation, you feel that this person is somebody I love, somebody I care about. If you go on a first date with somebody and they just slap you across the table at a restaurant, you won't see that person again, right? You run out of there like,
I'd probably knock them the fuck out first.
That's how domestic violence presents itself ever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't often show itself that quickly. So these abusers tend to be the charming ones, right? And that's why when you see them on the news or in the news, you see the friends and the family and the coworkers like, oh, they were this great guy. We loved them, or this great lady. We loved this person so much. And we never expected this from them mm-hmm. because they present themselves that in that same charming way that they present themselves to the rest of the world. They present themselves to their victim mm-hmm. initially. It grows over time. And that's when you see the signs over time. And then you're like, nah, you know, maybe they're just having a bad day. Maybe they were drinking, or maybe this. And you're giving them these excuses because you've grown to love them over time. You've grown, even have a family, have, you know, things in place, a home, etc. And maybe you got married and you're trying to make this work. And now mm-hmm. you're finally, something might have happened, a major event happens that you realize, oh, wait a minute, this is abuse. And I know that now because of the things I've heard or the information that has been shared with me. That's why prevention and community awareness is so important. In my situation happened back in 1998. Mm-hmm. It was 4 years after the Violence Against Women Act was signed. The Violence Against Women Act was signed in 1994. My oldest daughter was born in 1994. Mm-hmm. She's 26. Mm-hmm. So this is not that old, this work. It's not that old.
Yeah.
And so 4 years later, there wasn't that kind of information and resources. And I had been in the relationship longer than that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now Labor Day weekend, 1998, I'm finding myself in a situation. I have been in this relationship for 7 years. And now he's abusing me to the point that he shattered my left eye socket. I had to have multiple surgeries. I have a titanium implant that replaces the bone around my eye. I literally thought I was gonna die. And he rolled me around the city for I don't know how long, trying to decide what he was gonna do with me. And it's nothing but the grace of God that I'm here and alive. But I didn't know it. But and none of my other friends or family, like, that wasn't the conversation. Like, they knew it was a crazy relationship. They seen him key a car or bust a window out of my mother's house. Like, those things happen, but it was, he's crazy, or you're in a crazy situation. And I'm like, I know, he said he's bipolar, not like, and he needs help and he needs me to love him and support him. Not, girl, this is a bad situation. You need to get out.
Yeah, when you're,
because that wasn't the language there. So it's important that we have these kind of forums and these kind of conversations to really bring it home.
To normalize it, to identify what abuse actually looks like, and to, you know, and to disregard the idea that we know what a victim looks like. I mean, most people would never know or look at me and probably not know that I had gone through something like that. Not to where you went through, where I didn't get bones shattered, but I definitely showed up to work. And when I would be disrobing in the wardrobe trailer, I had bruises all over my body and I was losing a lot of weight. And it was just the stress of my relationship. I was starting to wear it. And my friends expressed concern, like, you okay, girl? And I'm like, you know, we argue. I was 125 pounds, 5'3". He was 6'1.5", 246 pounds. This is not a fight. He's throwing me around the room. He's throwing things at me. He's punching like, and missing but by a hair, like just the threat of this fist can go through a wall or it can make contact with your face. And I lived through that. And he was the biggest charmer. He was so charming and so handsome and so charismatic in the beginning. It didn't start right away. It started 6 months in when I was hooked. You know, I was madly in love. And it took all of my fortitude to leave. It was because my friends literally were like, Melissa, we think that one day he's going to kill you. And I didn't even believe it then. I still had a hard time believing and looking at him like he was my abuser. Outside looking in, I can identify it as what it was. But on the inside, it didn't feel like it.
On the inside, Melissa, because people hear your story and there's still going to be someone out there saying, okay, well, if somebody ever hits me, it's on, right? My abuse was different. Mm-hmm. Mine was psychological. Mm-hmm. So I was being verbally abused for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And I told myself, well, at least I'm not getting hit. Mm-hmm. And so for the whole year and a half that people were begging me, and I lost a lot of weight and I was sick too, but like, I was like, but he's not hitting me, right? Because in my mind, the girls who get hit are the ones who are being abused. I'm just dating someone who's talking to me crazy. Mm-hmm. And to me, that felt more like a couple's quarrel than abuse. Mm-hmm. When he finally did hit me, mm-hmm. I will tell you, I knew to leave then. Mm-hmm. However, the bruises healed in like a week. Mm-hmm. The psychological damage, it took me 2 years of therapy mm-hmm. to get over the verbal abuse.
I'm so glad you went to therapy.
There's going to be girls out there who are like, well, I didn't get hit. Just because you're not being hit does not mean you're not being abused.
Blue, let me tell you something. Right. I mean, it was more than just physical. It also was mental and emotional mm-hmm. abuse. I would say this to anybody with ears, that the emotional and the mental abuse was worse than the physical abuse.
Much, like it rocks you.
It destroyed my concept of self-worth and self-esteem. I had no defense mechanisms left. None. And I didn't go to therapy right afterwards. I entered into another relationship because that was a coping mechanism. And that, listen, this is not about my
terrible ass. Themselves in this, because even with most, yeah. you know, you always hear me say this.
Yeah.
I always say the one thing I don't do is sassy. Don't talk to me crazy.
Yeah.
And I have a wire, like it's very, very thin. Like the minute I hear any type of crazy talk, mm-hmm. I'm out.
Yeah.
And that's because it took me so long to pull out of the verbal abuse, mm-hmm. just a whiff of verbal abuse, even socially, mm-hmm. I cannot do it. Like mm-hmm. I'm physically incapable of doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people need to realize they're going to be watching this video the same way last week we did an episode where we're talking about men who were raped and didn't realize it because they got aroused and they didn't realize that arousal was not consent. There's going to be people watching this episode who didn't realize until this conversation that they were an abusive relationship, even though they weren't hit, even though they weren't the stereotypical black eye showing up. You know what I mean? Like, it's not always that dramatic. And I think Kaylin did a great job of telling you that when you say things like, oh, he's just bipolar, that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. That's a huge red flag when moodiness to the point of being extreme has now been normalized as your friends and family, as just a part of your relationship. That's not a healthy part of any relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
And he wasn't diagnosed with that. That was just something he was saying.
Oh, no, we all say that. We make fun of being bipolar. Right. Like it's a joke.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're very flippant about it. But if I can say this very quickly, you know, what we're describing and talking about is post-traumatic stress. And, you know, we really have to stop victim shaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of instances, you know, the abused, they're so ashamed of being in that situation. And I have to, you know, give a personal example. My daughter's 26, 27 years old. I should know my daughter's age. But there was a situation where, you know, a young man did something that was very violative to her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she lives in North Carolina, and my brother is closer in proximity than I am. Mm-hmm. And I said, why didn't you tell your uncle? She was ashamed. Mm-hmm. Because we have a culture that accepts certain levels of violence. And we're not that far away from when it was okay for a man to hit a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't say this to besmirch my late father's character. He got his life together. He met Jesus Christ. He became a pastor. But, you know, before he did, he hit my mother. And I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what people don't realize is, okay, yeah, you got saved. You found Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing good. He forgave you. But I'm still stuck with that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Deal with those trauma stories, and you know, hurt people, and those cycles will start to repeat themselves. And particularly in the Black community, we don't talk about mental health problems enough. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of these issues, even though they manifest themselves in a very violent way, they go back to, you know, a lack of attention and intentionality around getting mental health helps. I have a great therapist. I recommend him.
Oh, I love that.
I go every 2 weeks. I sit down, I talk to him, and I love it because you can talk to your girlfriend, you can talk to your best friend. But one thing about a clinical psychologist, psychiatrist, legally, they can't tell my business. Mm-hmm. I don't care how fallacious it is, because you got to get that mess out of you.
Yeah.
The only way you can change your trauma story is to be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And to be able to talk about it with people that are not judging you, not saying, you know, oh my God, how did you let that happen? Or I would never let that happen. And the person clams up and they just take that abuse and take that abuse. And, you know, and I'm just so happy, you know, and excited about this show. Mm-hmm. Because it gives an opportunity to talk about things that systemically are really doing damage in the Black community.
Yeah.
We talk about all the other economic inequities and all those other things, but until we deal with our trauma issues as a community, mm-hmm. we're just going to be rich people with bad problems.
Yeah. Blue and I talk a lot about therapy and how, you know, and how we've both gone to therapy and it was, you know, the best decision we could have done for ourselves, and how, you know, Black folks, we need to change the narrative that therapy is A, for white people, B, is a luxury item. It's not. It is an absolute necessity. And part of the reason why I wanted to have this show is because I have a very genuine concern that we're going to leave this health pandemic and we're going to have a totally different pandemic on our hands. We're going to have a mental health pandemic on our hands. We're going to have a child abuse and a domestic violence pandemic on our hands. These are some very real concerns that, you know, everybody should be slightly worried about, because there is no end in sight. They keep moving the goalposts on what the date is that we're, you know, going to rejoin civilization.
It's really 4 months, and they're just going to push it, give us a month at a time so that we don't revolt and start looting. I'm going to be honest with you. So I honestly, everybody that I'm hearing, from medical professionals to politicians to journalists, are saying it's always been 4 months, but mm-hmm. because they know y'all going to go crazy, they're giving us 30 days increments so that they can keep the peace. I would say essential workers in law enforcement. I have a lot of friends who work in the FBI and in the Metro Police in Washington, D.C., and I always beg them, please get therapy. I hope to God that in Detroit and everywhere else, anybody who's an essential worker is seeking out some sort of mental help, because even though you're helping save physical lives, you are putting yourself mentally in the line of fire every single day, and it's going to leave a mark. It is 100% going to leave a mark.
Right. Yeah. And that's a game changer in so many different ways. And if you ever do a show on this, please, mm-hmm. I will be your guy. I'm an advocate for therapy.
You promise? Let's write that down.
Oh, no. Ralph, I'm holding you to it. It's happening.
Seriously, because, you know, we have to take the stigma away mm-hmm. from mental health helps and talking about, you know, I've gone through depression. I've gone through PTSD, and I'm not ashamed to talk about it. I'm a consumer. I understand mm-hmm. what that means. Mm-hmm. I take a low grade depressive to, you know, keep me leveled out. I do mm-hmm. all those things, and my life has never been better because I now can face and deal with the traumas that I've been through, mm-hmm. and they have such a deleterious effect on your quality of life. Mm-hmm. Feeling bad becomes normal. Yeah. You don't even know mm-hmm. what to feel good anymore. So, Melissa, just to kind of, you know, bring it back, because I don't want to get too far off, but, you know, your foresight to raise this issue, because we are going through something that's unprecedented. I'm mm-hmm. 52 years old. I've never seen anything like this except in a fiction movie mm-hmm. where I said this could never really happen in real life. Mm-hmm. We're living. So we're going to have a country of traumatized people. And a lot of these things, we don't address them the way you're doing now, the way you're doing, Blue, with Kaylin's transparency. We're going to have a much bigger problem than COVID-19.
Absolutely. I'm terrified that this is going to turn into like The Purge. Like that was fictional, but it has some very, very, there's some very real parts to that. I mean, I'm watching all the stores get boarded up right now because they are concerned about looting. And I honestly think that that's,
you know, a foregone conclusion. I know that everybody has limited time, so I'm going to wrap this up. I cannot thank you guys enough. Ralph and Kaylin, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm going
to put a link to anything that you guys want to promote, your IG pages, Facebook pages. At the end, we're going to put a title card for the National Domestic Violence Hotline. I can only encourage people that if you know something's going on, don't think that it's somebody else's problem. Find a way to assist, find a way to like get a message to the person. Like if you need help, just blink once, you know, like whatever that is. But do you guys have anything lasting, anecdote that you want to leave with the audience?
I would just say to be compassionate of other people. You know, there are different people in different parts of the world that have recently even been through natural disasters. Mm-hmm. Housing is compromised in different places. People have different housing issues. You just don't know why people make the choices that they make. But as long as we continue to inform, we support, we understand this is an issue, and we also back and encourage our government to invest more money into these issues, to provide more resources for survivors that want to leave or need resources, because resources have been trimmed back mm-hmm. over the last few years. So we definitely need to put more into it to help survivors and help more marginalized communities during this time and moving forward.
Okay. And Ralph?
Well, I just want to tell you how appreciative I am of you bringing this subject up and putting it in the forefront. And what I would say is, don't pretend like you don't know what you know. Mm-hmm. Don't pretend like you don't see what you see. Don't shame the victim. As tenderly as you can, address it with them. And you may lose them as a friend initially, but if you can save their life, I guarantee you, when that person gets back to a place of wholeness and health, mm-hmm. you will have a friend for life.
Yeah.
Because you got to love people enough to tell them the truth. Yeah. So, God bless
you. Oh, I love that.
Agreed.
Get the message out. I'm just so appreciative of this opportunity to share my experience, and hopefully this is going to help and save somebody's life.
I hope so too. That is literally all we can do, is to offer the platform to have the conversation that needs to be heard by that one person that's going to step up and save a life. And that's my little anecdote. Blue, is there a message you want to sign off with?
Be kind to yourself and relax into what's happening, because it's not going to change anytime soon.
Amen. On that note, thank you all for joining us on I'm Here for the Food. Thank you guys so much. And until next time, take care, everybody.
If you like our show and the content we're featuring, please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube. And just like your Uber driver asks, leave us a 5-star rating. Also, please leave us a review about your favorite part of the show or your number one takeaway from the episode. We read all the reviews, and this will only help us curate the content that you want to see and hear. Thanks, guys.